It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, happy Monday to you, and welcome into Gwen and Chris, everybody. Kicking off another week here on 97.3 The Fan. Chris Ello, Matt Scraby together in our Odyssey Palace studios. Tony Gwynn Jr. down at Petco Park, where later on this evening the Padres will begin a three-game series against the Chicago Cubs. Happy 50th birthday to the late, great Hank Aaron, who hit his record-breaking 715th home run to move past Babe Ruth 50 years ago today. That is amazing to me. And I heard about that as a youngster. No, I was old enough to watch it.
I was going to say.
I'm sorry. I was old enough to watch it.
Weren't you the guy running on the field?
I heard about that as a youngster.
Yes, I was running on the field. I can't believe that was 50 years ago today, the late, great Hank Aaron. And, of course, we have a national championship to be decided tonight in the world of college basketball. And, yes, I do have a little bit of a little stuffy throat here, so my voice may sound a little off.
Scrape,
I don't know why you're so excited by
Scrape,
that.
Scrape, you should hit the clap button, and I'll tell everybody why.
Okay, here I go.
The mere fact that Chris actually would admit that is progress, ladies and gentlemen. We
progress.
Both come from an old school standpoint of, if you got the little sniffles, that's that sick. I can battle through sniffles. And I think that's where Chris is. Chris generally will tell us till he is, I mean, he's not going to ever go back on, I feel fine, I'll be good.
Oh, never. Ever.
Well, Scraby wanted to send me home when I walked in with the sniffles.
I was
he's
quite
like,
perturbed.
Get out of here.
I was quite perturbed.
Yeah.
Scraby's
like, really?
Definitely kind of that guy. He
Mr. Germaphobe over there.
Well, because here's the thing. He walks in, and when I say, are you sick, Chris? Because you can obviously hear that there's something going on. And he goes, nope.
I'm not.
Like, yes,
this is not
you
sick.
Are.
This is not sick.
And then you know what happened? When Tony got on the line, didn't even see us on camera yet. He said,
yes,
Chris,
he said this,
you got the sniffles? You a little sick?
The sniffles is not sick.
And then Brayden, before he left, he said, Chris, you better blow your nose before we go. Before
right,
you go
I,
on
I
air.
Have one, I have one thing to say to you. You are so soft. It is incredible.
Soft?
That you
soft.
Would
charming, baby.
You would consider not showing up to work today because you have to go like that? That's enough to keep you from going to work? Really?
Yes. No, it's not enough to keep me from going to
all right,
to
fine,
work.
I'm going home. You guys have a great
I
show.
Can give you... Here's the thing. We can broadcast from home if you are sick.
Not me. I don't have
no
the equipment
wants,
there anymore.
In Chris's defense, 2020 ruined doing anything from your house ever again.
I don't ever want to do that again. No,
I
you're absolutely
don't,
right.
I don't want to be in the house working.
Yeah,
for,
if you're home,
very long
if
time.
You're if you called in sick today because you got the sniffles, please send Scraby a text or a tweet and tell him that he's correct. But I mean, we have gotten so soft now out there, and
okay,
you are at the front of the line. You are at the front of the line.
It's not soft that I don't want to breathe in your cold particles
oh,
all day.
I have worse particles than that during the course of the rest of the week.
Okay, I'm not even going to ask about those particles because those are some strange particles. But I just, you know, there's people on the chat right now saying,
Where did they say it, Scrape?
Where'd it go? Oh, there it is. I'm with Scraby, though. You don't want to come into work with sick coworkers.
All right, fine. I'm going home. You got the show, Scrape. Good luck to you. Tony's got things to do.
Here's the problem with, and all three of us can attest to this. There's a problem with one of us three, specifically, I guess really all three of us now. If one of us has to pull out because of sickness, that means the load is heavier for...
It's way heavier on everyone.
It's a lot. Especially when you're... Right now, Scraby... I'll give Scraby some love on this. Scraby has progressed enough to where if Chris or I am out, we can make it work. There was a time where it was Chris... If Chris or myself got sick, we pretty much had to shoulder that full 4 hours. Now it's a little bit different now.
Yeah, now you can't shut me up. So,
unfortunately,
I don't know. I come from an era where I would think somebody would appreciate me
coming
into work today and being, saying, hey, this is nothing. I'm going to come in and work rather than looking for an excuse and a way out. But instead, I'm getting grief for coming in.
Richie.
See, I want to say personally, I appreciate you, Chris, for coming in. However, I'm also not there in the room.
Exactly. You don't have to smell these dumb crackers. You don't have to do any of the stuff that I have to do.
I know one thing. Jesse Agler would probably kick me out of the booth. He's not a fan. Yeah,
without question.
Yeah, he's
you
not
wouldn't
a fan.
Last a day in this booth like that.
Rudiger says 5 minutes and they're starting with bickering?
That's right.
That's what we do.
This wouldn't be Gwen and Chris without it. Come on,
Jocelyn says I need to put up plexiglass because then Chris won't spray particles in my mouth.
Yes, thank God we had all that. Thank God the people who make plexiglass are all billionaires now.
They are,
thanks
for
to
real.
The COVID virus.
Okay, I can't even begin to start with the big business and COVID and all that stuff.
Well, let's not go there.
Okay.
Let's just
all
leave
right.
that in the past
okay.
where it belongs.
Right.
One thing we can't leave in the past, unfortunately, is the pain of yesterday's loss to the Giants. 3-2 to close out that series. Just the same way, you get a walk-off 3-run home run in the bottom of the ninth, and that win feels a little better than all other wins. That's where yesterday's loss felt compared to other losses. In my mind anyway, you get 11 hits. You don't allow any earned runs. Waldron really pitches well. Your rookie center fielder goes 4-for-4. You got the lead the entire day, and, you end up not winning that ball game. To me, that hurts a little more. I know you're going to say it's just another loss, but I think we know better, Tony. Those are a little tougher to chase away, and it'll be interesting to see, how they bounce back tonight and hopefully are able to put it in their rearview mirror.
Yeah, those type of losses definitely stick with you longer than, your run-of-the-mill 4-2 loss, 3-2 loss. Like, that kind of loss stings. And you know what? I kind of have a dose of reality for all of us here at San Diego as it pertains to the Padres. And here's what I got for you. The Padres come into the season as, with the roster they have right now, with a small margin for error. And you can make the argument that it's less than small margin for error. As long as Manny Machado and Ha-Sung Kim are cold, that small margin for error is even less, right? Because you're going to be producing runs at a 2-3-4 clip. And guess what? You're going to have to win those games. When you have a shot to win them, whether that's considered playing perfect baseball or close to perfect baseball, the reality is, especially as long as I would argue two of the biggest cogs in this lineup are cold, those are games. That's how you're going to have to win those games. And you're going to win those games by out-executing, by making the little plays, something as small as in yesterday's game, right? Ha-Sung cuts down the territory on that rundown, which I would say is a good idea in most cases. But the one thing, I constantly think of David Eckstein when I think of this. That man used to catch the ball with that second hand over his glove. Even in times where it just felt like that's not what you're supposed to do, he always tried to secure it that way. And last night, that led to the Padres, that game being tied and the Padres losing it. his error earlier in the game. It's a routine grounder. I don't know if he forgot that his best bud was, you know, going down the first baseline. He can run a little bit. But it looked like when he picked his head up, it was like, oh, you know what? This dude is already down the line, sells the throw. That run ends up coming in to score as well. And so I say that to say yesterday it was Ha-Sung Kim. The first game that the Padres lost in that series, I wrote these couple little things down after that game. You had Toddy throwing to the wrong base. The play should have been to home. He ends up throwing it to second. That guy probably doesn't even get waved home, but they wave him home. They tie that game early in the first. You got De Los Santos hitting Matt Chapman with a 1-2 count in that game, in the game one that they lost. The walks in general, the hit by pitches in general, these are some of the small things that I'm talking about that when you don't have a large amount of room for error, that you just have to be good at. It's possible to play that way. It's possible to win some games playing close to perfect baseball on the defensive end and on the pitching side. And you scrape together the runs that you can, and you try to hold the lead. Because that is where this team is at right now. Now, listen, once Manny and Ha-Sung get going, then you might have a little more room for some of those plays that don't ultimately end up costing you. But for the time being, that is where this ball club is. So we have to wrap our minds around the fact that, you know, you can't be looking for the 5-6 runs per game when your two of your biggest hitters aren't at their best right now.
Yeah, there's your four or five hitters, right? I mean, that's the middle of your lineup, and neither guy's hitting much better. Ha-Sung Kim is just over 200. Manny is just under 200. Everybody wants to jump. You're right. Ha-Sung Kim, he said as much. I cost the team the game today with those two errors. I think you bring up a great point on the David Eckstein move. You know, we are too cool now to put two hands around, you know, the glove and make sure we secure the ball. And, you know, that cost him a little bit yesterday. I mean, if he's able to do that, that ball probably doesn't come out. The other thing I thought of on that play, Tony, and maybe it was just happened too fast, bang, bang, but with runners at first and third, should Juan Soler have even been running? Should he not have tried to stop and get in a rundown so the run could come in from third base before he was tagged out? I mean, I don't know that even he did the right thing there. It worked out okay for the Giants because the ball came out.
That's a great point. Because here's another thing, right? I think this happened the first game, too. It might have been the second game. Jake, on that same ball, I think the previous day or the day before, hesitated on what to do, and we end up not getting an out, I believe, on that particular play. He corrects it, does the right thing. He doesn't even mess around with the run. He goes right to tag first base to get the out. Now, to your point, you're right. Soler probably should have stopped in the middle and definitely got the run. Now, unless he calculated, like, I'm big, might be able to dislodge this thing.
Yeah, I don't think
which
so.
Which is, you know, which in real time, I don't know if he's thinking that way.
Yeah.
But to the other point I was trying to make, yes, Ha-Sung, he made the decision to close the gap on that. It didn't work out. Is it different if he stays at the bag and now all of a sudden you're not dealing with the big body of Soler? You're only dealing with the leg that you just got to tag, and you've done that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. These are the little things that I'm talking about that you got to hit on. When you don't have the margin for error, you just have to be good in the other areas of the game. And I should say you got to be great in the other areas of the game. And the Padres are right now okay in those other areas. They're not perfect yet, and they'll need to be while everybody gets to the spot where they need to be offensively.
Yeah, I think they have less room for error right now. They're not playing well enough to win with that little room for error. They certainly didn't yesterday, and they'd lose a very tough game and drop 2 out of 3. They still haven't won a series yet this season. They are 5-7. The only good news is no one else in the division is doing a whole lot better, except for the Dodgers. So the Padres are tied for second place as they get set to host the Cubs tonight. We'll see how it goes. Now, the other thing that I just wanted to touch on real quick. The lineup has been the exact same for all six games. All 12 games, the first six, has been the same. Now, you're in a streak right now, Tony, where in 56 of the last 57 innings, the Padres have not been able to put up a crooked number. That's more than one run. The only inning that they've got more than one run was the Jurickson Profar Grand Slam on Saturday. Other than that, they have not had a two-run inning more than that. Should Mike Shildt consider changing things up a little bit, or is this an anomaly? Because that's a pretty long stretch there. That's about seven, eight games.
I'm sure after, you know, the consecutive amount of games with the first six, I'm sure at this point, maybe not. We're getting closer, I should say, if we're not there, to my guess of Mike Shildt changing things up a little bit in terms of maybe shuffling. But I can tell you right now, actually, he did shuffle up a little bit today. It just popped up on my phone.
All right.
We got one shuffle.
Ooh, shuffle.
You want to hang on to this shuffle,
ooh,
or you want to expose it now?
No, let's hang on to that shuffle.
Oh,
hang
come on.
To the, no, no, the
slight,
no.
Hang on to the slight shuffle. Let's get to break. We're talking Padre baseball. Talking Padre lineup more specifically when we return.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Two twenty-two on the clock.
Where are
Wait
you?
Wait a second. I think that's our first effect from the day's eclipse.
Oh,
right there.
We're blaming it on the eclipse.
You know what happened was I looked at my computer and it said April 8th and the 2/22 is like right next to each other. I'm sorry. And then I was also thrown off because the cameras were facing like chairs that were empty.
I just realized that.
And so I was like, are these guys back in the studio right now or is it just me?
Oh, hello. So, here we are.
I mean, you know, I got a little confused there. Welcome, man. 2:23 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, Matthew Scraby. We teased before break that there was a slight lineup difference than there has been over the past, 12 games for the Pods?
Yeah, first 12 games. The first six guys in the lineup are the exact same.
In game 13, however, that will not be the case. And the switch is happening at the bottom of the six. Profar slides up ahead of Ha-Sung Kim. So instead of 5-6, it is now still 5-6, but now Profar is hitting ahead of Kim as opposed to Kim hitting ahead of Profar. There is one other change in the lineup, a minor change, and that is Jackson Merrill slides up a spot. Him and Tyler Wade flip-flop. So you still get the speed at the bottom of the lineup. I think Jackson's swinging about a little bit better right now, so he gets a chance at another AB before Tyler does. So there's your slight change. No, I don't consider that a major thing, but we do know Jackson's swinging a bat better than Profar right now. Jerickson swinging a bat better than Ha-Sung right now. So there's your change.
Going to have to get some crooked numbers, right, one way or the other. So I think it's understandable. Profar hit that grand slam. But otherwise, you know, you haven't had a two-run shot. You haven't had a two-run double by anybody. Even a two-run single, right? I mean, you're going to have to score a couple here from time to time. It's hard to put, you know, single digits up there and win a lot of games.
You're right. It's not ideal. But as I said last segment, it may be what you're going to get on most of the nights. I mean, you're going to need to score. Obviously, you want to score runs. But, you know, until that starts to happen, you better tighten up everything else in terms of this Padre team. So today, Darvish on the mound. He tries to get this Padre team back going in the right spot. As we've seen from all the starters from the Padres, Chris, they've gotten better with each and every start that they've made. This will be Yu Darvish's third start, I believe. Yes.
I think fourth.
Fourth?
Because he had the first two, right, before they even got into the rotation. And, you know, give a little credit. We talked so much about the loss yesterday and how much it hurt. But all of you that were pretty much ready to kick Matt Waldron to the curb can now quiet down a little bit, right? Yeah. I mean, the guy looked really, really good. And it was his defense.
He took on Logan Webb.
They should have beaten Logan Webb for the second time this year, which is not easy to do, especially up there where Logan Webb is lights out. He was getting the ball up a little bit yesterday, and the Padres are making him pay for it. This pitching staff, the last time through the rotation from Darvish through to Waldron, 31 and a third innings and 7 earned runs. That's a 1.72 ERA. Should have a better record than 2-3 during that span.
Yeah.
Thanks to that starting pitching. So, you know, you got to clear up the bullpen a little bit. I'd like to see some more defined roles there.
Where do you want to see the roles be at?
Well, I don't know if I can go straight up this way, but, you know, I'd like to see 7th inning. I expect to know who's going to run through the gate. 8th inning, I know who's going to run through the gate.
Who would you like to see?
I'd like to see a little more De Los Santos near the back end of the game, and I'd like to see Matsui. And if I need to a little longer, I'll go Peralta. I'm not sold on Kolek yet, and I'm certainly not sold right now on Brito, although I don't blame him for the loss yesterday. Again, the defense was a big factor. I think those two guys got to earn a little bit more time by pitching in different situations.
Fair enough.
I can't say I'm right. I'm just playing manager for a little bit.
None of us truly know if we're right or not. I mean, we just are going off of what we've seen. De Los Santos the night before, or what was it, the first night, he was the culprit of the 1-2 hit by pitch that late in that game that led to the Giants getting a victory. Not sure if that was a reason to not go to him in that spot yesterday, but he decided to go with Kolek. I think, these roles are still developing, clearly, because we've seen guys outside of Suarez, we've seen everybody in different spots. I mean, we've seen Matsui late. We've seen De Los Santos late. We've seen Kolek late. So it's clear that, you know, they're still trying to figure out what exactly that looks like to this point.
And I think that's fair. I mean, it's a new season, and you're 12 games into it.
Is it?
Yes, it's a new season. We told you last week that you're not allowed to comment until game 70. So you still have a long way to go, pal.
Hey,
you gave up the season at 7 games, we told you that you're going to have to wait for 70. Yeah.
You can even ask.
So I don't want to hear it.
Hey, you can even ask all the listeners out there on Friday when I did the extended edition of the Scraby Show. I fought with my own self on the air about being patient while being wanting to freak out at the same time.
I would love to have heard what that sounded like. You trying to keep yourself.
Me literally telling myself on the air that I cannot panic yet because it's too early in a season. I'm trying real hard, guys.
Yeah, well,
I have a question, though, Chris.
What's that?
And this is a legit question, because we used to talk
why don't you let us decide if it's a legit
question? Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. But we used to talk about how the lineup was different every day, and it was a problem. No one can get into their roles with the lineup being different every day. But now we want the lineup to be different every day?
I asked if it's time to take a little look at it. I think the last eight games, you haven't been producing a lot of runs.
Why? Another question I got yesterday, and we have Padres pen pals later. Maybe I'll squeeze it in. But why is Xander Bogaerts still the leadoff hitter? Tony?
Mike Schilt, are you there?
Because Mike Schilt is writing his name at the first spot in the lineup.
That's where he wants it.
At this point, right now, no one is a good option at leading off. No one's getting on base other than Jackson Merrill. And before the cries of moving him to the top of the lineup start, I beg you to reconsider. Let this young man go out and just keep playing. You're getting good results that way. There's no need to move him to the top of the lineup at this point.
I'm with you, because at the dog park this morning, that was the topic.
Jackson Merrill to number one?
Yes. Number one, and moving Xander Bogaerts down to like six or something like that. But I understand the question. I understand the question, but like you guys said, you need to be patient, everyone. Okay?
Let me also add to this that the baseball lineup, to me, especially nowadays, is just overrated. You got to bat somewhere. If the guys in the lineup start doing the job they're supposed to do, it's not going to matter where they're all hitting. Manny's got to start driving the ball against the fence. Fernando's got to be a little more consistent. Bogaerts needs to hit for some extra bases. You know, I mean, that's Ha-Seong Kim's got to, you know, get back to a little bit more of what we saw last year. Wherever they bat, if those four guys batted 6, 7, 8, and 9, and they all four did what they're supposed to do, the Padres would score a bunch of runs. I just think it's fun to pick on the lineup as a way that if you change it, then it'll change the outcome.
Right.
If it was that easy, that's what they would all do around baseball.
If it was that easy, the Padres would win 100 games last year.
Yeah, because they changed the lineup every day last year.
And
it didn't seem to work.
There every day.
Right.
So,
well, thanks for answering, guys.
You're welcome.
Let's get to break.
No, go back to being patient.
Let's get to break. When we come back, Ken Dorsey.
Nope.
Yahoo Sports.
Russ Dorsey. Nope. Ken Dorsey played. Is Ken Dorsey? Former offensive coordinator.
I'm sorry. I meant Russ Dorsey. Yahoo Sports joined us. Maybe he could talk some sense into us when we come back. More Gwen and Chris.
All right, welcome back to the program. 2:37 is the time. Padres and Cubs coming up a little bit later tonight from Petco Park. First of not only a three-game series, but first of a weird three-game homestand. Get three, and then it's right back out on the road. As Tony pointed out, Jerickson Profar and Ha-Seong Kim have swapped places in the lineup. Profar will bat fifth. Kim will hit sixth. Jackson Merrill moves up to eight with Tyler Wade falling to nine. So a couple of little changes for Mike Schilt. Behind you, Darvish. You, despite pitching well, still going for his first victory of the year in his fourth start. They have the national championship. College basketball game is coming up tonight as well, guys. And just to give you an idea what the people are thinking out there, UConn opened as a 6-point favorite. Now they're a 7-point favorite. I don't know. They're so good. Even with a 17-point spread, it seems like they would be the choice, although Purdue does have Zach Edey, could make things interesting tonight.
I have a feeling that you're rooting for Purdue. No, for the other team.
I am.
Because you don't like Mr. the Big Man, right?
You know what? I've got a lot more respect for him watching him play. You know, my first thought was that Zach Edey's good because he's tall. And that's not fair. He's good because he's got some really good moves. Yeah. And I got to give him a lot of credit. I think he's a much better player than I thought. And I think it'll be interesting tonight to see him go against UConn's big man.
Yeah, no.
At 7-2, that's going to be a fun matchup to watch those two guys.
I was in the same boat as you, Chris. I was under the impression that he was just a dude with a bunch of size, wasn't very, like, agile. But after watching him maybe the last two games a little more closely, he got some skill. Now, yeah. I don't know if that translates to the next level, but he certainly is a problem at the collegiate level, and it should be a pretty good game. I think he's going to give Purdue a more than a puncher's chance because of, you know, his skill level.
He's not the uncoordinated 7'5" that we usually see at the college ranks.
No. Or at the any ranks.
Right.
7'5". You know, the other thing, here's the thing that sticks in my head, and then we'll get to Russ Dorsey, who's waiting patiently to talk some baseball with us, but the Aztecs only had the 2 days to get ready for UConn in the championship last year, and they never could figure out UConn's intricate offense. And I think Purdue's going to find that they're going to have a similar problem.
Yep, I agree.
UConn's offense is so intricate, and I don't know that Purdue shoots it well enough, because Alabama shot it well and had to stay in that game. Purdue's going to have to make a bunch of shots. Anyway, we'll talk more about the game later. Right now, we want to talk baseball, and Russell Dorsey has been so good to us. He joins us from Yahoo Sports to talk about the grand old game. Russell, how are you today, sir?
What's going on, guys? How are we feeling?
We are excellent. Thank you very much. Happy 50th anniversary of Hank Aaron's record-breaking home run. I don't know that you're not old enough, but I am. I saw it when it happened. But I think we need to take a minute, you know, in baseball especially, history is such a big part of this game, and what Hank meant to it and what that home run record still means to people today, even though, interestingly, he doesn't hold the record anymore.
Yeah, I think when you look at the history of baseball and how we reflect on things, we're always going to have baseball. We're always going to have new kids born every year and kids that don't know about Hank Aaron. And I think it's really important to celebrate these moments that are so important to the history of the game, but also celebrate those people. Like Hank Aaron is one of the all-time greats, a GOAT, not only in the history of Major League Baseball, but in, you know, the history of African-American players in Major League Baseball. I think that's really important as we have conversation about the decrease in African-American players in the game. The fact that African-American history is such a big part of baseball's history. And so I think it's always very important to remind people who may not know, kids who are growing up, who are fans of the game that want to learn about the game, contrary to popular belief. It's really important for us to continue to look back and say, this was one of the great players, but also people we've ever seen.
No doubt about it. Well said, Russ. One of the teams that you covered for a while is the Chicago Cubs. They're coming to town here against the Padres. I mean, what have you made of their early season? They're 6-3, off to a pretty good start. I mean, what do you make of this ball club so far?
Well, they've been able to put runs on the board, right? You have a Dodgers team that I've seen a couple of times, both here in Chicago and out in L.A., to start the season. And you guys know that team is absolutely loaded, and the team that people would probably put on paper as the World Series winner right now. And they played them tough, won 2 out of 3 games. The offense was there. You got guys like, you know, obviously Cody Bellinger had a big series. It seems like every time he plays his old team, he wakes up for those games. But you're getting a lot of production from Seiya Suzuki. You're getting production from Christopher Morel. Michael Bush, who was a top prospect for the Dodgers for a long time, finally get his chance to play in the big leagues with the Cubs over at first base. Dansby Swanson has had a really nice start to the season. So it's been the offense that's really carried the Cubs while they've tried to figure out the starting pitching side. Obviously, they lost their opening day starter, Justin Steele, to a hamstring injury during that first start of the year. But it's the offense. And I think that was the thing for me coming in this year. Is like, all right, with Shota Imanaga, with Justin Steele, the Cubs would probably be solid with their starting pitching. But would they be able to score enough runs, not only to win their division, but to compete with some of the big boys in the National League? And so far, through the first couple of weeks, they have been able to do that.
Russell Dorsey, Yahoo Sports baseball expert, and I don't say that lightly. He joins us here on Gwen and Chris. The Yankees are 8-2. That's a little bit of a surprise, but not that big when you compare it to the Pirates being 8-2. It's not just Pittsburgh, but which of the early season surprises? Detroit's off to a nice little start. Boston was picked last. They've won 7-10, and they haven't even played at Fenway Park yet. Anybody you like in the early going that you think can sustain something this year, Russell?
Yeah, I do look at what the Yankees have been able to do so far this year, and one player stands out to me. and it's not Aaron Judge, and it's not Juan Soto. I love that duo and that combination, and I think that would be a fantastic duo for the next 10 years for the Yankees. It's Anthony Volpe, their starting shortstop, a guy who last season came to the big league level, and he struggled, right? Like, bar none, he struggled. Defensively, he was very strong, and I think that was probably the reason that he didn't get demoted to AAA, because he was so strong defensively, and he didn't let that offense carry over into the field. But I think when you look at the changes that he made to his swing, the setup looks a little bit different. The swing obviously looks different. He's making consistent hard contact. He's starting to tap into that power, even though he's not a big guy. He did, you know, scouted as a guy who did have some power in there. He's tapping into that, and he looks like the top prospect that many people thought he would be coming into last season. So we already know what we're going to get out of Aaron Judge. You already know what you're going to get out of Juan Soto. And Giancarlo Stanton is going to be a guy that, when healthy, is going to hit a lot of home runs for you in the middle of that lineup. Same thing with Anthony Rizzo. But if you can get a guy like Anthony Volpe at that 5, 6, 7 spot in that order to be a guy that has an 800, 820, 850 OPS, that makes that lineup a lot tougher. Because you look at what makes the Dodgers special. Yes, they have Mookie and they have Shohei and they have Freddie Freeman. But it's the fact that they have a guy in Teoscar Hernandez hitting 5th or 6th. The fact that they have a guy like Max Muncy hitting 5th or 6th, or sometimes not even starting. Like, that matters. And it's daunting for opposing pitching to say, man, all right, we made it through that top three. Oh, man, we got Volpe. We have Osvaldo Cabrera, who's been a guy that's had a really nice start for them. So I think he adds a lot to that depth. And Anthony Volpe could be a guy that is in the All-Star game for the Yankees.
Russell Dorsey joins us here, Yahoo Sports. And Russ, I want to go back to the Cubs because obviously they're in town. You mentioned their offense, and they've got their normal guys in that lineup in terms of Bellinger, and you mentioned Swanson. But you brought up the young Michael Bush, who's having a good start. Christopher Morel, who came on the scenes a couple years back blazing, has all of a sudden found his offensive stroke, at least early on. Are those two guys, can they sustain this? I think that's the question that, in terms of lengthening this lineup out, I think will have to be answered, correct?
For sure. And I think the thing for me with Christopher Morel, he's one of those guys that is a tweener in that he doesn't necessarily have a position, but the bat could be special, so you're trying to figure out ways to get him in the lineup. So if they didn't have a second baseman, he would play second base. And, you know, before they got Dansby Swanson, he did play a little bit of second base. But now you have a Gold Glove caliber second baseman in Nico Horner. You have a guy that's won a Gold Glove in Dansby Swanson, actually 2 Gold Gloves. And so it's like, all right, well, if you don't have a third baseman, you can pencil him in at third base, and that power plays a lot more. Like, guys, for the people out there, Christopher Morel hit 37 home runs between AAA and the big leagues last year. So you got to find a way to get that power into the lineup, especially for a team that needs that offensively. And then with Michael Bush, I think he's had a really solid start to the season. And I think the benefit that he has is that he's an older prospect, hasn't played a full year in the big leagues yet, even though he's been a top prospect for a while now. And so I think he has an opportunity to sustain that. And I don't think they're looking for Michael Bush to be a 30 home run guy at first base. But if you can hit 280, 290, get on base at a 330, 340 clip and offer some power and be solid defensively, I think they would be very happy with that. And I think that would be a great first start for Michael Bush in his first season in the big leagues.
Cubs are off to a good start, and they're coming into town to take on the Padres starting tonight. Russell, bigger picture question. You had the injuries this weekend to the pitchers. I mean, losing Spencer Strider, Shane Bieber, Yuri Perez, and that adds to a list which is, you know, really a who's who. Shohei Ohtani can't pitch. Jacob DeGrom, Sandy Alcantara, Robbie Ray, and I'm leaving some pretty good ones out of there. Baseball needs to take notice of this. I don't know that anybody has the answer yet. What are your thoughts on how baseball goes about trying to get some of this to slow down?
Yeah, it's really sad because you rattle off an all-star team of names there, right? You're hoping for the best with Spencer Strider, but with everything we've heard, it doesn't sound like we're going to get a happy ending to that story. And, you know, Kyle Bradish, who was a great story for the Baltimore Orioles last year, same thing. It's difficult because I think we're looking for an answer where there's not a black and white answer to why this is happening. And it's something I thought of this weekend, the last couple of days, of like, all right, there's obviously a story here to write about with arm injuries in Major League Baseball, but where do you look, right? Do you start grassroots and with youth baseball? Well, yeah, I think you look there and like, all right, are we pushing kids too hard? Are we making the arm do things that it shouldn't do at early ages? Yes, well, maybe. But then you get to the big league level, it's like people want to blame pitch clock. People want to blame velocity. And it's something I actually asked Cubs manager Craig Counsell about yesterday, where it's like, well, the problem with demonizing velocity is we're not in a day and age where 89, 90 miles an hour is going to, one, get you to the big leagues, and two, you're not going to be able to necessarily get hitters today out with 89, 90 miles an hour. Like, guys are so geared up where you're seeing 90 miles an hour as a 13-year-old. By the time you get to the big leagues, you've seen that so much, it's going to be very hard to get out as a just a 89, 90 command control guy. So I think there's a lot of different places you can look for an answer. And I think the other thing, guys, teams have tried it so many different ways to try to protect guys, yet you get to the same results. Like, for the Miami Marlins, they're probably sitting scratching their head like, okay, you tried to cap Yuri Perez's innings last year to help protect him, Tommy John surgery. And then 2 years before that, Sandy Alcantara went out and threw as many complete games as we've seen a pitcher throw in the last decade, went off to win the NL Cy Young Award, Tommy John surgery. So I don't know what the answer is. If I did, I'd be a much richer man than I am. And I think there are a lot of people around Major League Baseball that are looking for answers, because it is concerning when you have names like DeGrom and Ohtani and Bradish and Ray and Spencer Strider, who I think a lot of people had pegged for winning the Cy Young Award this year in the National League, and not having those guys in the game is a bad thing.
Yeah, it opens up really a ton of avenues, Russ. I mean, you've heard John Smoltz mention the whole redlining thing. How much of the onus, you know, is this on the teams? Because you mentioned the young kids.
Yeah.
At least in my experience, they take their cues from the big guys, from the big leagues, right? I think we're seeing all of the stuff that is happening at the big league level trickle down now to the younger levels. And we are seeing injuries, and it seems like at a very high clip. And maybe in today's athlete, right, that if you're throttling down a little bit, it's not 90. It's not 89. Maybe now it's like 93, 94.
Right.
Which you can still get.
Back to the program. 2:37 is the time. Padres and Cubs coming up a little bit later tonight from Petco Park. First of not only a three-game series, but first of a weird three-game homestand. Get three, and then it's right back out on the road. As Tony pointed out, Jerickson Profar and Ha-Seong Kim have swapped places in the lineup. Profar will bat fifth. Kim will hit sixth. Jackson Merrill moves up to eight with Tyler Wade falling to nine. So a couple of little changes for Mike Schilt behind Yu Darvish. Yu, despite pitching well, still going for his first victory of the year in his fourth start. They have the national championship. College basketball game is coming up tonight as well, guys. And just to give you an idea what the people are thinking out there, UConn opened as a six-point favorite. Now they're a seven-point favorite. I don't know. They're so good. Even with a 17-point spread, it seems like they would be the choice, although Purdue does have Zach Edey, could make things interesting tonight.
I have a feeling that you're rooting for Purdue. No, for the other team.
I am.
Because you don't like Mr. the Big Man, right?
You know what? I've got a lot more respect for him watching him play. You know, my first thought was that Zach Edey's good because he's tall. And that's not fair. He's good because he's got some really good moves.
Yeah.
And I got to give him a lot of credit. I think he's a much better player than I thought. And I think it'll be interesting tonight to see him go against UConn's big man.
Yeah, no.
At 7-2, that's going to be a fun matchup to watch those two guys.
I was in the same boat as you, Chris. I was under the impression that he was just a dude with a bunch of size, wasn't very, like, agile, but after watching him maybe the last two games a little more closely, he got some skill. Now, yeah. I don't know if that translates to the next level, but he certainly is a problem at the collegiate level, and it should be a pretty good game. I think he's going to give Purdue a more than a puncher's chance because of, you know, his skill level.
He's not the uncoordinated 7'5" that we usually see at the college ranks.
No. Or at the any ranks.
Right.
7'5". You know, the other thing, here's the thing that sticks in my head, and we'll get to Russ Dorsey, who's waiting patiently to talk some baseball with us, but the Aztecs only had the 2 days to get ready for UConn in the championship last year, and they never could figure out UConn's intricate offense. And I think Purdue's going to find that they're going to have a similar problem.
Yep, I agree.
UConn's offense is so intricate, and I don't know that Purdue shoots it well enough, because Alabama shot it well and had to stay in that game. Purdue's going to have to make a bunch of shots. Anyway, we'll talk more about the game later. Right now, we want to talk baseball, and Russell Dorsey has been so good to us. He joins us from Yahoo Sports to talk about the grand old game. Russell, how are you today, sir?
What's going on, guys? How are we feeling?
We are excellent. Thank you very much. Happy 50th anniversary of Hank Aaron's record-breaking home run. I don't know that you're not old enough, but I am. I saw it when it happened. But I think we need to take a minute, you know, in baseball especially, history is such a big part of this game, and what Hank meant to it and what that home run record still means to people today, even though, interestingly, he doesn't hold the record anymore.
Yeah, I think when you look at the history of baseball and how we reflect on things, we're always going to have baseball. We're always going to have new kids born every year and kids that don't know about Hank Aaron. And I think it's really important to celebrate these moments that are so important to the history of the game, but also celebrate those people. Like Hank Aaron is one of the all-time greats, a GOAT, not only in the history of Major League Baseball, but in, you know, the history of African-American players in Major League Baseball. I think that's really important as we have conversations about the decrease in African-American players in the game. The fact that African-American history is such a big part of baseball's history. And so I think it's always very important to remind people who may not know, kids who are growing up, who are fans of the game that want to learn about the game, contrary to popular belief. It's really important for us to continue to look back and say, this was one of the great players, but also people we've ever seen.
No, no doubt about it. Well said, Russ. One of the teams that you covered for a while is the Chicago Cubs. They're coming to town here against the Padres. I mean, what have you made of their early season? They're 6-3, off to a pretty good start. I mean, what do you make of this ball club so far?
Well, they've been able to put runs on the board, right? They, you have a Dodgers team that I've seen a couple of times, both here in Chicago and out in L.A. to start the season, and you guys know that team is absolutely loaded and the team that people would probably put on paper as the World Series winner right now. And they played them tough, won 2 out of 3 games. The offense was there. You got caught. Guys like, you know, obviously Cody Bellinger had a big series. It seems like every time he plays his old team, he wakes up for those games, but you're getting a lot of production from Seiya Suzuki. You're getting production from Christopher Morel. Michael Bush, who was a top prospect for the Dodgers for a long time, finally get his chance to play in the big leagues with the Cubs over at first base. Dansby Swanson has had a really nice start to the season. So it's been the offense that's really carried the Cubs while they've tried to figure out the starting pitching side. Obviously, they lost their opening day starter, Justin Steele, to a hamstring injury during that first start of the year. But it's the offense. And I think that was the thing for me coming in this year is like, all right, with Shota Imanaga, with Justin Steele, the Cubs would probably be solid with their starting pitching. But would they be able to score enough runs, not only to win their division, but to compete with some of the big boys in the National League? And so far, through the first couple of weeks, they have been able to do that.
Russell Dorsey, Yahoo Sports baseball expert, and I don't say that lightly. He joins us here on Gwen and Chris. The Yankees are 8-2. That's a little bit of a surprise, but not that big when you compare it to the Pirates being 8-2. It's not just Pittsburgh, but which of the early season surprises? Detroit's off to a nice little start. Boston was picked last. They've won 7-10, and they haven't even played at Fenway Park yet. Anybody you like in the early going that you think can sustain something this year, Russell?
Yeah, I do look at what the Yankees have been able to do so far this year, and one player stands out to me, and it's not Aaron Judge, and it's not Juan Soto. Both, who one, I love that duo and that combination, and I think that would be a fantastic duo for the next 10 years for the Yankees. It's Anthony Volpe, their starting shortstop, a guy who last season came to the big league level, and he struggled, right? Like, bar none, he struggled. Defensively, he was very strong, and I think that was probably the reason that he didn't get demoted to AAA, because he was so strong defensively, and he didn't let that offense carry over into the field. But I think when you look at the changes that he made to his swing, the setup looks a little bit different. The swing obviously looks different. He's making consistent hard contact. He's starting to tap into that power, even though he's not a big guy. He did, you know, scouted as a guy who did have some power in there. He's tapping into that, and he looks like the top prospect that many people thought he would be coming into last season. So we already know what we're going to get out of Aaron Judge. You already know what you're going to get out of Juan Soto. And Giancarlo Stanton is going to be a guy that, when healthy, is going to hit a lot of home runs for you in the middle of that lineup. Same thing with Anthony Rizzo. But if you can get a guy like Anthony Volpe at that 5, 6, 7 spot in that order to be a guy that has an 800, 820, 850 OPS, that makes that lineup a lot tougher. Because you look at what makes the Dodgers special. Yes, they have Mookie and they have Shohei and they have Freddie Freeman. But it's the fact that they have a guy in Teoscar Hernandez hitting 5th or 6th. The fact that they have a guy like Max Muncy hitting 5th or 6th, or sometimes not even starting. Like, that matters. And it's daunting for opposing pitching to say, man, all right, we made it through that top three. Oh, man, we got Volpe. We have Osvaldo Cabrera, who's been a guy that's had a really nice start for them. So I think he adds a lot to that depth. And Anthony Volpe could be a guy that is in the All-Star game for the Yankees.
Russell Dorsey joins us here, Yahoo Sports. And Russ, I want to go back to the Cubs because obviously they're in town. You mentioned their offense, and they've got their normal guys in that lineup in terms of Bellinger, and you mentioned Swanson. But you brought up the young Michael Bush, who's having a good start. Christopher Morel, who came on the scenes a couple years back blazing, has all of a sudden found his offensive stroke, at least early on. Are those two guys, can they sustain this? I think that's the question that, in terms of lengthening this lineup out, I think will have to be answered, correct?
For sure. And I think the thing for me with Christopher Morel, he's one of those guys that is a tweener in that he doesn't necessarily have a position, but the bat could be special, so you're trying to figure out ways to get him in the lineup. So if they didn't have a second baseman, he would play second base. And, you know, before they got Dansby Swanson, he did play a little bit of second base. But now you have a Gold Glove caliber second baseman in Nico Hoerner. You have a guy that's won a Gold Glove in Dansby Swanson, actually 2 Gold Gloves. And so it's like, all right, well, if you don't have a third baseman, you can pencil him in at third base, and that power plays a lot more. Like, guys, for the people out there, Christopher Morel hit 37 home runs between AAA and the big leagues last year. So you got to find a way to get that power into the lineup, especially for a team that needs that offensively. And then with Michael Bush, I think he's had a really solid start to the season. And I think the benefit that he has is that he's an older prospect, hasn't played a full year in the big leagues yet, even though he's been a top prospect for a while now. And so I think he has an opportunity to sustain that. And I don't think they're looking for Michael Bush to be a 30 home run guy at first base. But if you can hit 280, 290, get on base at a 330, 340 clip and offer some power and be solid defensively, I think they would be very happy with that. And I think that would be a great first start for Michael Bush in his first season in the big leagues.
Cubs are off to a good start, and they're coming into town to take on the Padres starting tonight. Russell, bigger picture question. You had the injuries this weekend to the pitchers. I mean, losing Spencer Strider, Shane Bieber, Yuri Perez, and that adds to a list which is, you know, really a who's who. Shohei Ohtani can't pitch. Jacob DeGrom, Sandy Alcantara, Robbie Ray, and I'm leaving some pretty good ones out of there. Baseball needs to take notice of this. I don't know that anybody has the answer yet. What are your thoughts on how baseball goes about trying to get some of this to slow down?
Yeah, it's really sad because you rattle off an all-star team of names there, right? With You're hoping for the best with Spencer Strider, but with everything we've heard, it doesn't sound like we're going to get a happy ending to that story. And, you know, Kyle Bradish, who was a great story for the Baltimore Orioles last year, same thing. It's difficult because I think we're looking for an answer where there's not a black and white answer to why this is happening. And it's something I thought of this weekend, the last couple of days, of like, all right, there's obviously a story here to write about with arm injuries in Major League Baseball, but where do you look, right? Do you start grassroots and with youth baseball? Well, yeah, I think you look there and like, all right, are we pushing kids too hard? Are we making the arm do things that it shouldn't do at early ages? Yes, well, maybe. But then you get to the big league level, it's like people want to blame pitch clock. People want to blame velocity. And it's something I actually asked Cubs manager Craig Counsell about yesterday, where it's like, well, the problem with demonizing velocity is we're not in a day and age where 89, 90 miles an hour is going to, one, get you to the big leagues, and two, you're not going to be able to necessarily get hitters today out with 89, 90 miles an hour. Like, guys are so geared up where you're seeing 90 miles an hour as a 13-year-old. By the time you get to the big leagues, you've seen that so much, it's going to be very hard to get out as a just a 89, 90 command control guy. So I think there's a lot of different places you can look for an answer. And I think the other thing, guys, teams have tried it so many different ways to try to protect guys, yet you get to the same results. Like for the Miami Marlins, they're probably sitting scratching their head like, okay, you tried to cap Eury Pérez's innings last year to help protect him, Tommy John surgery. And then 2 years before that, Sandy Alcantara went out and threw as many complete games as we've seen a pitcher throw in the last decade, went off to win the NL Cy Young Award, Tommy John surgery. So I don't know what the answer is. If I did, I'd be a much richer man than I am. And I think there are a lot of people around Major League Baseball that are looking for answers, because it is concerning when you have names like DeGrom and Otani and Bradish and Ray and Spencer Strider, who I think a lot of people had pegged for winning the Cy Young Award this year in the National League, and not having those guys in the game is a bad thing.
Yeah, it opens up really a ton of avenues, Russ. I mean, you've heard John Smoltz mention the whole redlining thing. How much of the onus, you know, is this on the teams? Because you mentioned the young kids.
Yeah.
At least in my experience, they take their cues from the big guys, from the big leagues, right? I think we're seeing all of the stuff that is happening at the big league level trickle down now to the younger levels, and we are seeing injuries, and it seems like at a very high clip. And maybe in today's athlete, right, that if you're throttling down a little bit, it's not 90. It's not 89. Maybe now it's like 93, 94.
Right.
Which you can still get guys out with. It's a very interesting conversation because, you know, there's a lot of these. I liken it to quarterbacks in the NFL. These pitchers are going down, and they're kind of the guys that you want out there every fifth day because people want to see them pitch.
Yeah, we're talking about big dogs, right?
Yeah.
List of names we mentioned are guys who finished top five in Cy Young Award voting. Like, we're not talking about back-end starters here. And so that's definitely something, if you're a team, especially a team that competed for the World Series, like Gerrit Cole, that's a name we didn't mention. That's a guy that I want out there as much as possible. And when he's not, the Yankees aren't as good of a team. And I think the other thing is maybe less about the fastball, maybe more about breaking balls, right? Where
you
have kids that want to snap these nasty sliders that they're seeing on Pitching Ninja and sweepers, et cetera. And so that's another area where it's like, all right, have we gotten so breaking ball heavy? Have we gotten so breaking ball focused where it's just like, well, once I get to, I'm trying to get to 0-2 as fast as possible so I can wipe you out with this nasty breaking stuff. And maybe that's another area where it's like, oh, this could be in a small way a part of a bigger conversation. But I think all these things play into this issue, and I think teams have tried, especially for the last decade, as we've seen, you know, injuries in terms of organizations rise. But a lot of these guys, if you start to look, have had Tommy John surgery, whether it was high school, whether it was college. You know, like a guy like Walker Buehler coming back for the Los Angeles Dodgers, he's coming back and, you know, on a rehab assignment right now off his second Tommy John surgery. right? Like, you look at, like, Dustin May. You look at Nathan Eovaldi, who's been able to come back and pitch really well after multiple Tommy John surgeries. I think that's what teams are trying to avoid, where it's like, all right, if you have one, okay, but you don't want guys having two and three Tommy John surgeries, because not only are you putting guys at risk, but it's like, well, how do we salvage what was once a very talented player?
Yeah, and just as we talk about it, Framber Valdez is scratched from his start tonight for the Astros with a sore elbow. So let's hope that that's nothing. We'd need all day to try to figure it out, and even that wouldn't be enough. But Russell, always great catching up to you. Love talking baseball with you, and hope we talk to you again soon. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Russ.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
You betcha. Russell Dorsey right there with some very knowledgeable stuff on baseball from Yahoo Sports. We'll take a quick time out here as we get to the top of the hour. We've got Daily Gambit headed your way next. How are we going to pick tonight's UConn-Purdue national championship game? How did things go over the weekend? We'll find out. As Gwen and Chris gets rolling here with Chris Sello, Matt Scraby, Tony Gwynn Jr. on 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.